Why Republican John Courtney believes he should replace Democrat Shelley Pingree in Maine's 1st Congressional District. Maine's Southern District has historically been in the blue column, but John Courtney believes voters are ready for change. Courtney has served as Senate Majority Leader in the Maine Legislature for the past 2 years and chairs the Taxation Committee and the Joint Select Committee on Regulatory Fairness and Reform. Courtney is touting his record as a strong advocate for job creation and for lower taxes and reduced government spending. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll ask the Springvale small business owner why he believes the time is right for voters in the 1st District to embrace those same goals. Join the conversation. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a message on our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. John Courtney, Republican for Maine's 1st Congressional District. This is Maine Calling.
This Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com, by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me.
And John Courtney, welcome to Maine Calling.
Hey, how you doing today?
It's been a few months since we had you on during the primary.
It has. It's good to be back, Keith.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Want to learn a little bit more about you for those who aren't familiar with you. Talk about certainly some of the important policies, questions that are before voters on the November ballot as they choose candidates to represent them in Congress. But I wanted to run a couple of newsy questions by you. Oh. First, a reaction to the recent comments by Mitt Romney that have stirred so much attention about the 47% that he is not paying attention to, who don't pay their federal income taxes or who don't pay federal income taxes and who see themselves as victims and expect government entitlements. Just your general reaction.
Well, I think for a lot of us, $250,000 is an awful lot of money. And, sometimes I think people get out on a trail and, they may say things that they may have phrased a different way. Or maybe if you listen to the whole clip, it isn't exactly what it was. But that's for that campaign to deal with. You know, the real issue, I think, is, how are we going to build a bridge for more people to climb the ladder and be prosperous? And we've tried to do that in Maine. We took 70,000 low-income people off the tax rolls this last session. We did it with bipartisan support. We worked across the aisle to build bridges. And that's what we need to do at the national level to solve the problems that are bigger than any one of us. There's no simple solutions, but no one party can have all the solutions. We need to send leaders to Washington that will bring people together, that will talk to one another. And even if you disagree, learn from the people that you disagree with.
But politically, you need to get support from independents in this district who otherwise might go over to Shelley Pingree. You need to win them over.
Does this, sure. And this, Democrats,
this doesn't,
too.
This doesn't help your cause, does it, or does it make much difference?
Oh, I think the people of Maine are intelligent enough to separate comments from one candidate to another. So I think it's almost like it's insulting them to think that, they can't differentiate between the two. So, yeah, I'm confident that they can. You know, as a Republican in Sanford, I would never have been elected to the Senate had it not been for not only independent support, but Democratic support. And really, one of the things I think this campaign's going to do is we're reaching out to the old-time Democrats, that feel that this party has become so extreme and gone so far away from their values that they need to have a place to go. I won't agree with everybody on any particular issue, nor should they agree with me, but I will listen and I will always do my best to be respectful and try to learn. Because that's really the most important thing. Learn from people that have different views than you have, and you can go a long ways to solving problems.
Let's learn a little bit more about John Courtney. From Maine originally?
Yeah, I was born in Biddeford. I grew up in Wells and raised my family in Sanford. And my kids are all grown. I have a small business and worked hard my whole life to try to earn a living and take care of my kids. And I've been very fortunate to be able to do that. A few years ago, I was one of those guys that sit around and complain, like a lot of us do, and we get frustrated with politics, and we don't think that our voice is being heard. So some friends of mine, he says, well, why don't you do something about it? So I did. I ran for the Maine House of Representatives. I was fortunate to win. 2 years later, I ran for the Maine Senate. Once again, I worked hard, and we were able to had a good team and won. And just this last term, I was elected by my peers to be the Senate Majority Leader.
Courtney Cleaners is your business. Yes, did you face obstacles? You said you were you complained a lot. Was it about taxes and regulations? What was the issue as you grew your business?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, I have a business in New Hampshire as well, a branch in New Hampshire, and we just found it was a little more favorable. Frankly, the biggest issue, I think, was the economy. The economy in Portsmouth as opposed to the economy in Sanford. And there was a distinct difference. And I wanted to see that we have the same opportunity in Maine. You know, Maine is just a beautiful state. And sometimes I get frustrated, and I'll share it, that some people think that we have to accept this second-class economic status to enjoy the beauty of Maine. And I don't believe that. And as chair of the Regulatory Reform Committee last year, when they said that we couldn't pass bipartisan regulation to bring predictability and stability to regulation, we were able to do that. And the most important message that came out of that, and not only to sending a strong message to business that we're embracing job creators, but we worked together, and the most important message was we learned this by listening to the people that were going across the state. The most important message was that we didn't have to sacrifice our beautiful environment to have a great, prosperous place to live.
If you were to be elected and go to Washington, what would be your approach to fixing the U.S. economy to create jobs?
Sure. Well, the first thing is we need to talk to one another. And in Congress today, that does not happen. It's very clear that there's a number of members that are very content with waiting for the next election, and we need to do better than that. That is in the tradition of Maine. They expect their leaders to go down there and solve problems, not create them or not throw bombs across the aisle. We need to address the national debt. If we don't address the national debt and make some difficult decisions, there will be no future. The solutions will not be in our hands. We've already seen that happening in Europe with Greece and the crisis with a number of nations over there. We need to make sure that we do that. We also need to find ways to reduce the cost of health care. Health care is taking up a bigger and bigger piece of the pie. We need to make it more accessible. We need to make it so that someone can sit at their kitchen table and buy health insurance. It doesn't have to be as complicated as many seem to want it to be.
So when you say reducing the national debt, there, to a simpleton like me, there are two ways to do that. One is to raise taxes and the other is to cut spending. What do you do more of?
Well, I'll tell you, there's three ways. There's reducing taxes, there's increasing taxes, and there's reducing spending. And what we need to do is the third way is the most important one, and it's truly the only way that we can get there, because you can't increase taxes enough to reduce the debt. You're going to cripple the economy if you do that. If you cut spending to the level that it would take to get your arms around the debt, you can't do that either. We need to grow the economy. We need to make it broader so that more people are paying in and more people are prosperous, more people are successful, so they have an opportunity to pay in. We need to make the economic pie larger for everyone, not fight over the ever-shrinking slivers of the economic pie.
But I assume you do support some cuts in government spending.
Yeah, I think we need to, obviously, everybody's going to say you got to go after the waste. Some of the boondoggles that we've seen, like the Solyndra fiasco, where special interests have benefited immensely. We need to make sure, I think the first one, we need to make sure that Congress follows the same rules that we have to follow right here on Main Street. It shouldn't be that you go to Congress and you serve for a decade and you come back and you're set for life. You need to go to Congress. You need to come back the way you go out. And I think that's what the people on Main Street are expecting. And, I don't think people in Maine I think people in Maine, their values reward hard work, and they want people to be successful. And that's why I'm running.
So one of the major expenses has been foreign wars, the U.S. military. Should we cut our military spending?
I think we need to be more focused. I think that, I would have to look at the exact budget with regards to the military budget. I think we need to be very cautious about that. I think that some of our troops and our support efforts have been shortchanged. We need to make sure that we have the best possible equipment necessary. We need to make sure that we support the efforts of the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, Brunswick Naval BIW. We need to make sure that we prioritize within the military. But we need to prioritize with everything. And we need to get away from this culture that government can solve all problems, because government cannot. The only true way to solve the problems is to make in my opinion, is to create the opportunities so that we don't have the Washington elite saying what you can have or you're going to have this and you're going to have that. Let's unleash the power of the entrepreneurial system, the people that have been pent up, that haven't taken those chances over the last couple of years because there hasn't been predictability and stability in the economy.
Would you change anything in the current tax structure? Make certain segments of folks pay more and others pay less, or flat tax? Or what would you do?
Sure. Well, I don't think we need to increase taxes. I think that that is a recipe to exacerbate the recession that's been ongoing. I think there was a piece I saw the other day, the Congressional Budget Office suggested that if the tax credits expire, if they're allowed to expire at the end of the year, it could potentially increase unemployment by 1%, which would be catastrophic to the economy. So I think we need to make sure that we look at that. Where I would make a major change, and I would like to get my arms around the tax system, is where these, I call them high rollers, for lack of a better name, they find ways and loopholes to move their business overseas, move it to the Virgin Islands, move it to Europe, and avoid paying taxes and avoid following the same rules that we have to follow on Main Street. That is clearly unfair, and we need to put an end to that.
What can one major expense for those of us here in the Northeast, particularly lately, is gasolines go over $4. What can Congress do, if anything, to lower the cost of energy?
Well, I think that the other day I bought gas. I saw it on the highway. It was $4.19 a gallon. It's just unconscionable. And we are so dependent still on that. And, I think there's a group that think that if you raise it high enough, alternative energy is going to be affordable. Well, there's another group of us that think that if we lower the cost and we get more sources of energy, it will also reduce the cost and make it affordable. You know, people talk about, how you're going to help this person or that person, but so many people have been hurt because we haven't had an energy policy here in the United States for the last 4 or 5 years. It's been very difficult, and on the front lines, I fought last year to try to increase funding for LIHEAP. We sent the president a resolution, and he turned his back on the people of Maine, unfortunately, with regards to that resolution. We never got a response.
Do you support tax incentives for developing alternative energy?
I support tax incentives in developing energy to some extent, but a couple things. And number one, I think it should be limited. I think it should be targeted, and it should be focused, and it needs to be. They need to have a pathway to the marketplace, and I think that's very, very important.
Do you support nuclear power?
I think I do. I do, but I support it only in the manner that it could be. It would be safe, and I think the technology has improved vastly from 30 years ago or 40 years ago. And I think all sources of power need to be certainly on the table. And we need to make sure that we don't depend on the Middle East. We don't want to be dependent on the Middle East for our source of energy.
Would you support expanded domestic drilling, including offshore drilling for oil?
I would to some extent, but I think we need to be very careful. We need to be very cautious. Obviously, we don't need to see offshore drilling in the Gulf of Maine. That's not really practical. But I think that we do need to be, you know, I think with today's technology, I think that we can do that. We can get there. We can produce our energy in North America. Frankly, I don't think it's – there's so many sources, existing sources of energy. We need to really go after that.
Our guest is John Courtney, a Maine Senate Majority Leader and resident of Springvale, a candidate for U.S. Congress. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, many states seek to only partially implement Medicaid reforms of the Affordable Care Act. What changes in Medicaid rules could mean for state budgets, the federal deficit, and the nation's poor.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Intelligence Squared U.S. invites the world's leading thinkers to debate today's most critical issues.
Our government can be corrupted by campaign money.
The next motion up for debate. Are super PACs good for democracy?
Basically, this is a debate about who decides what you can say.
There are, in effect, no lines between super PACs and candidates.
And I see this as fundamentally an issue of freedom of speech.
Join us for that Intelligence Squared debate tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Broadcast of this Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com, by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, a Your Vote 2012 interview with John Courtney. He's the Senate Majority Leader in Augusta and resident of Springvale. He's the Republican candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District House seat. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Take calls in a moment. We want to move on, though, to health care. Do you support the President's Affordable Care Act?
No, I don't. I think that the Affordable Care Act has some long-term, some real problems with it long-term with regards to the deficit. And I think it takes health care decisions out of people's hands. I think that it, long-term, I think that it could go down a path where we get into a rationing situation. I'm concerned about the impact on Medicaid, and we need to I think there are some things in it that are good. I think the allowing young people to stay on their parents' policies, which we've already got in Maine, I think that's good. I think that I don't question the intent on that. I think people, a lot of good people, have different points of view, and I don't question. I think people had good intentions when they did that, but I think that we need to look at some ways. And frankly, I believe that it should be repealed. But repealing it is not enough. It must be replaced. It must be replaced with some common sense solutions. Some of the things about, you know, so you can remove the high risk, you can subsidize that rather than subsidize everything. Try and get more healthy people into the market. You know, some of the work we've done here in Maine, when we were researching it, we found out that the number of young people, 18 to 25, was five times as many young people, 18 to 25, had health insurance in New Hampshire that had health insurance in Maine. And frankly, it's because it was unaffordable for people. So we needed to find ways to get people into the system. And the only way you can get 18 to 25-year-olds into that system is to reduce the cost. And we've started to see some movement in that direction. And I think that those are the types of solutions that we need to bring.
What should we do, if anything? Can we do anything to bolster Medicare?
Well, I think obviously we need to make sure that we protect Medicare for anyone. We need to, with the commitment to people 55 and older, needs to be a solemn that cannot be undone. And but for those of us that are younger than 55, I'm 46. I think that it is going to have to change somewhat. We're going to have to look at some changes there. Part of the changes would be obviously the retirement age. I think will probably have to change. We will need to look at how the delivery system of Medicare. We need to look at, rather than incentivizing doctors and healthcare professionals for treating someone, maybe they need to be incentivized for keeping people healthy. Maybe we need to, find ways to do that. We need to make it so that there's a lower cost delivery. So that, it's funny. One day I had a sore throat and I was up in Augusta and I was a long ways from home, and I couldn't get into a doctor, and I went into the Walmart walk-in clinic, and my gosh, I was in and out of there in 10 minutes. I had an antibiotic, and I was on my way to recovery. So it was pretty simple. So I think sometimes the bureaucracy of healthcare does get a little more complicated than it needs to be.
What about means testing for Medicare?
Well, I wouldn't completely rule that out. I think that if people pay in, they certainly need to be there's been a commitment made for what they've paid in, so they need to be entitled to whatever they paid in. But I wouldn't completely rule that out in the context of a larger, more comprehensive group of solutions.
Promise to go to phones in a minute, but just want to follow up some similar questions about Social Security, another major entitlement. Do we need to consider means testing there or increasing the eligibility age?
Well, I think, again, I think for 55 and younger, I think that that's I think that they 55 and older, we need to make sure that that's protected. I think that we do need to look at that for 55 and younger. I'll tell you something, though, that's been happening. There's been a reduction. We've all had a reduction in our Social Security, the amount taken out of our checks. And and both the employers and the employees, and the people in Washington want you to think that that's a tax break, but it isn't. What they do is that money not getting put in there is being recalculated so that when it's time to collect your Social Security, you're going to get a smaller benefit. And it's really unconscionable that that's going on, and there's going to be a lot of people that are really surprised and upset about it.
But you're saying that for the current people who are eligible and those who are about to be eligible, we should protect it. But for people, I'm 52, maybe I shouldn't expect as much when it comes my turn.
Well, as 46, I haven't expected it. I never thought it would last this long 20 years ago because it did not look good. But we do. We need to look at new ways of delivering it. We need to look at ways to improve the investment. The system as it exists will not survive forever. So we need to realize that. And in order to save it, we're going to need to change it.
All right, let's go to Cape Elizabeth. And is it Elsie?
Elsa.
Elsa. Hi, Elsa. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. So my question for you, Senator Courtney, is regarding the minimum wage rate. Is that something that you support nationally? And is it something that you'd support raising for Americans?
I don't support the national minimum wage. I don't think that should be done. That should be a state decision. I think the minimum wage is certainly an issue that politically is a lot of people think that that's a way to spur the economy, but frankly, I think it has the reverse effect. So I don't support a national minimum wage.
And what about at the state level? Is that something that you could support?
At the state level, I support the existing minimum wage. I think that if Maine were to increase the minimum wage at this time with this economic climate, I think there would probably be a backlash for a lot of the small job creators. You know, one of the big things about minimum wage, and it, you know, it's fine to have that discussion, and I think that it's one that you know, it's good to have periodically. But what we really need to do is we need to look at you know, perhaps a training wage. You know, when we have a you know, when you have a 17-year-old that doesn't have the expenses, you know, earning the same as a, you know, a single mother trying to you know, pay the bills, there's quite a disparity. So we need to work on policies, as I have done in my time in the legislature, to try to encourage job creators, encourage people to come in, so that the, you know, the second tier wage earner has more opportunity to get to the third stage, and so that there isn't a wall. When people get to a certain level of prosperity, they say, "Well, my gosh, if I go to the next level, I'm going to lose my benefits, or my health care." We need to create a stairway off that, and that's one of the things that I've advocated for very strongly in my time in the legislature.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation with John Courtney, candidate for Congress. Let's go to Augusta and Tom. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for taking the call. I'd like to know the senator's position related to the so-called Norquist pledge. Has he taken it? If he hasn't, will he or won't he? And you know, how will that affect his decision making?
Sure. Well, thank you for the question. It's a good question, and it's something that I struggled with.
This is a pledge drafted by Grover Norquist, who is
sure. Yeah, he's an anti-tax advocate from Washington, and you know, I have a pretty strong record of fighting to reduce taxes in Maine, and I did not take the pledge, I'm not going to take the pledge. I understand that there's a lot of pressure. They try to put pressure on people, but you know, when we're going to have some tough decisions to make. We're going to have to in the next few years. And you know, if I vote to close a loophole for somebody that's taking their company overseas to avoid paying taxes to the United States of America, and some guy, and I don't want some guy in Washington arbitrating whether that's a tax increase or not. I just think that's wrong, and I'm not willing to sign a pledge like that. I'm going to fight to lower taxes and create a fair playing field for all Americans.
Well, thank you, and I support that position. Thank you.
All right, Tom, thanks for calling. 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Stuart in Edgecombe. Hi, Stuart. Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, you know, this is all good stuff, and I'm liking what I hear out of the senator, but I had a kind of a more general question for the senator, and you know, I've been listening to Shelley down here in Edgecombe, you know, and she's been promising hope for us for 4 years. I'm self-employed and a single parent, and I just wanted to know what the senator feels, that how he can create some change for me.
Sure. Well, thank you, Stuart. I got a little echo over here. Yeah. I don't know.
Sorry about that. Is it cleared up now?
Yeah, it's a little better. Well, thank you, Stuart. You know, I think the hope that I see coming forward is one of the issues. You know, 2 years ago, my opponent and her party controlled the governor's office, the president's office, and both bodies, and they could do whatever they wanted, and they put in some of the policies that we are paying for today, for lack of a better phrase. And, you know, I think that is a mistake, and I'll just put that in contrast with what we did in Augusta. In Augusta, we had an opportunity. With the same situation, we controlled the governor's office, the House and Senate, and all of it for the first time in my lifetime, and I'm 46 years old. And there was a lot of pressure from within that said, well, we're in control. We need to pass legislation because we have the votes and we have control. And we could have done that, but we decided not to do it that way. We decided to work together across the aisle and bring people together. We talked to the other side of the aisle, and we tried to agree. We did welfare reform, the regulatory reform, health insurance. We created incentives for small business through the tax code. All of those major accomplishments that we did with bipartisan support. And we didn't have to do it that way. But we did it that way because it was the right thing to do, and we wanted to change a culture. We wanted to create a culture for job creators to come to Maine and embrace growing their businesses in Maine and creating jobs. That was the sole focus for why we did it that way. It wasn't good enough to just pass something because you can flex your muscle. We haven't operated that way. And in Washington, that's not how it goes. It seems like both sides, when they have the opportunity to flex their muscles, they flex their muscles. And the people of Maine expect different from their leaders. And that's why I'm running for the United States Congress.
Our guest is John Courtney, candidate for Congress in Maine's 1st District. We'll take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Doug Saunders says the video insulting the Prophet Muhammad that provoked violent protests last week was promoted by a movement that plays on fears that growing Islamic communities in Europe and the U.S. represent a threat to Western values and security. Saunders' new book is called The Myth of the Muslim Tide. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson joins us with his vision for the campaign and the country. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point this evening at midnight. And join us at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling, for the TED Radio Hour. Being happy is a universal human yearning, but this simple goal often eludes us. If we're truly able to attain happiness, then how do we find it? 3 TED speakers offer some big ideas for achieving happiness. That's the TED Radio Hour this afternoon at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2012 conversation with John Courtney, GOP candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District seat. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. We have an email from Sharon, who says, in the state legislature, you supported Public Law 90, a bill that gave Anthem the power to raise insurance rates on small business owners in rural parts of the state and on small business owners employing older workers. As a small business owner myself, I know firsthand how unaffordable health insurance is. Can you explain why you supported a bill that put the insurance company in front of the needs of small businesses?
Well, it certainly did not. And that is a fallacy pushed by a number of people that want to use this as a political issue. PL 90 was put together to lower health insurance. We had seen consistent increases of between 10 and 20% year after year after year. It looks like this year for the small groups, the increases are going to be in the single digits, which is significantly below previous years. In addition, we got the initial results of the legislation, and a few years ago, Dirigo Health was passed, and the administration stuck their head in the sand, unfortunately, and wouldn't adapt. When we passed PL 90, we said we would adapt and we'd come back and if we needed to make changes. We did make some changes, and I just heard today that there's some initial results that some people up in northern Maine are actually reducing significantly. So, one of the most important things that we did in PL 90 is we created this Maine Guaranteed Access Plan where small businesses would have an opportunity to, if they had somebody that was really sick in their group, they could go into this Maine Guaranteed Access Plan, and they would seamlessly be in that, and that person would be subsidized, but they wouldn't even know that. And it was a seamless plan, and that will help drive rates down. We've already seen that it's starting to drive rates down. It's coming down quicker in southern Maine than northern Maine because, number one, the Maine Guaranteed Access Plan just went into place in July. Number two, there's a lot more people in southern Maine, so it's a lot clearer. But no, I can tell you firsthand that I know that a lot of insurance companies didn't want this. You know, the existing climate for health insurance in Maine, has driven out almost every health insurance company that was here before. Now they're looking at coming back in. They're looking at offering plans, low-cost plans. In addition, we changed the bands from, I think it was 1.5 to 1 to 3 to 1, which means the highest person, it won't be 3 to 1 till next year, I believe. But that is one of the biggest criticisms of it. But the Obama administration passed a law that would expand the bands to 5 to 1. So that means the highest person could pay 5 times more than the lowest person. And the only way that works is if you can lower the cost for the entry-level people so you can get the healthy people. As I mentioned earlier, you have people out of state. In New Hampshire, they have 5 times more young, healthy adults in the system than we do in Maine. So that's what we got to do. In order for health insurance to work, we need to get them into the system, incentivize them to come into the system, and lower the cost for all. And ultimately, that's what this legislation will do, and it will do it. And I'll tell you something else. We made a commitment. If there's a piece that is not working, we're going to go back and fix it. And I won't be there, but I can tell you there's a lot of people still there that will do that. So that's what we need in leaders.
Let's go to Northern Maine. Let's bring Danny into the conversation, who's calling from Madawaska. Hi, Danny.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, the question I have is that the two-prong system seems to be broken because many people don't feel that they're not representing us, they're representing special interest and lobbyists and such, and it seems to be apparent whenever we have to have some significant reform, such as Wall Street reform or immigration reform or the healthcare reform, we have a lobbyist group such as the Chamber of Commerce, which is largely funding the Republican Party, undermining our healthcare reform and other types of reform like immigration reform. And I like to ask a guest, since these lobbyist groups do fund these campaigns, how is he going to stop these lobbyists from controlling our Congress?
Well, I think the lobbyists are funding my opponent's campaign. They're not funding mine. I'm raising money one handshake at a time. We've been working across the district, talking to people, listening to their concerns, talking to them about their hopes and their dreams for the future. And, you know, when I go to Washington, I'm going to do the same thing I did in Augusta. I'll listen to anyone, but I'm going to make decisions of what's best for the people that sent me there. You know, I have a little litmus test that I use. I've got some really good friends at home, and, you know, we'll go down, we'll sit around, go have a cup of coffee, and they'll ask me questions. They'll say, well, why did you vote this way? Why did you vote that way? And if I can't explain that to them, I need to go back and look in the mirror. And let me tell you something. I'm not afraid to go look in the mirror. I'm not afraid to look in if somebody has a better idea than I have. I'm not afraid of that, and a lot of politicians are. And maybe that doesn't make me a very good politician, but it helps me sleep at night.
Well, I'm glad you are, and I'm glad you're willing to stand up to these large lobby groups that the reason we don't have a public option is because the Obama administration crumbled to these lobbyist groups such as the Chamber of Commerce, who was working with the health provider and insurance companies to stop the public options, and pharma was able to stop them from the Obama administration from putting in reform for our pharmaceuticals and being able to purchase them overseas. And now we have a pay-to-delay program in the pharmaceuticals, and Chamber of Commerce is backing the Republican parties largely here, and I think it's a shame, and I hope you do get in there and are able to change that.
Well, thank you. And you know, I respect your point of view, because, you know, we won't agree on everything, but we will have a dialogue. And that's been a hallmark of the work that I've done in Augusta, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
We've got about 5 minutes of dialogue left here today, so let's go to Nico in the car. Hi, Nico.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, good, thanks. Go ahead, please.
I would just like to, speaking of dialogue, actually, this is interesting, because I feel that the senator kind of dodged your comment, asking him to comment on Mitt Romney's remarks the other day. Here's somebody who made, I think, $41 million last year, paid 13.9% federal income tax, mocking 47% of the country for not paying income tax and for being victims or seeing themselves as victims. And I, for one, am totally shocked and offended by that comment, and I feel that he can't dodge it. Mitt Romney is not just some other candidate running. He's actually the leader of the Republican Party right now, and he represents the views of the Republican Party. And I'd like more clarification from the senator on his views of this outrageous statement. Thank you.
Well, I'm you're not going to hear me dodge anything, so I'm sorry about your perspective. But having said that, you're talking to the guy that helped get 70,000 low-income Mainers off the tax rolls. I don't believe that if you're at that level, you should be even paying taxes. So I think that's a good thing. As far as the people that want to perpetuate the class warfare, I don't believe that that's the solution for our to fix our economy. I think we've started to go down the path of divide and conquer, and I believe we need to bring people together. So that's what I try to do, and I'm not afraid to stand up and be counted.
A couple of social issue questions. Do you support same-sex marriage?
No, I do not.
Do you support the right to an abortion as it's protected under Roe v. Wade?
I oppose abortion except in the cases of rape, incest, and the life of the mother.
And what should our what are we doing right and wrong? What would be your approach toward our strategies in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, I think consistency is probably the biggest thing. It seems like we have an inconsistent foreign policy. Obviously, we need to make sure we need to get our troops home. And we also need to, if we do need to put our troops in harm's way, we need to make sure that that our enemies know that if we are there and they attack the United States of America, they are going to pay the ultimate price. And that I don't believe that hammer sits out there like it used to. And that really concerns me because I think we've seen recently these groups attack the United States and maybe they think they can get away with it. And they shouldn't be able to.
Let's go to Peaks Island and Henry. Henry, about 30 seconds here.
Okay. Do you agree or disagree that a policy of containment would be preferable to a war in the event that sanctions and diplomacy failed to bring the changes in Iran's nuclear program demanded by the president? And give us the source of your agreement or disagreement, what you read or who influences you on the subject?
Okay, that's a lot of questions for 30 seconds. I guess what I would say is I respect that the commander-in-chief has a lot more information than I have as a candidate for Congress. And I respect that, and I think we need to make sure that in those situations we need to support the commander-in-chief. However, we need to make sure that Iran does not get a nuclear weapon. That will blow up the Middle East, and that really concerns me. We need to make sure that we support our allies in the Middle East, such as Israel. And I'll tell you that the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt is not our ally. And we need to make sure that we know the difference between our friends and our foes in that area.
Literally 30 seconds left. Why should Maine voters in the 1st District support you instead of Shelley Pingree this November?
Well, there's a clear contrast. I have worked to bring people together. We have accomplishments in the legislature, every major accomplishment from health care reform to regulatory reform to tax incentives for job creators. We cleaned up the mess at the Turnpike Authority. My bill brought accountability to the Housing Authority. Every one of those pieces of legislation were done with bipartisan support. Generally, what's happened in the past is a predictor of the future. I bring a history of bringing people together. I don't believe that my opponent does that in Washington. I believe it's time for a change, and I think that I'm the change that Washington needs.
John Courtney, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
John Courtney, Republican candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional House seat. In the coming weeks, we'll be speaking with all the candidates on the ballot for U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. Our Your Vote 2012 interviews will be archived on the MPBN website. Go to mpbn.net and click on the Your Vote 2012 banner. Today's program, produced by Jonathan Smith, John Keimel ran the board. We had help from the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, Biodiversity in Maine. Join guest host Susan Sharon for a conversation with the chief scientist from the Biodiversity Research Institute and Jim Fowler. He's the former host of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom and frequent guest on the Johnny Carson Show. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
The cast of this Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com, by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME. This is listener-supported MPBN Radio, the Maine public broadcast.